Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, the only podcast with the wit and sparkle of Murphy Brown. I am your host, Bob Mackey, and my mom says I'm cool. And this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
A creature of pure malevolence, Henry Gilbert.
And who else?
Industrial chimney sweep, Chris Antista.
And today's episode is Burns' Heir.
Wow! Bob Mackey!
Hey, it's
wow,
me.
That's where it comes from.
Yes, this episode made me famous briefly.
No, I said your name.
I know the kids in sixth grade were losing their shit. But
you stole my opening quote. I was going to do My Mom Says I'm
Cool. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you need to come prepared for two with two because I talk first.
Yeah.
Today's episode, Burns' Heir, aired on April 14th, 1994. And Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Boy, Bobby, it's a big week in news, so this is going to be a little long. Bridges of Madison County and Michael Crichton's disclosure received some stiff competition from Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus on the bestseller list. Pioneer Electronics announces a CD player exclusively for club DJs so as to drive the death knell into the vinyl industry. The world mourns Nirvana lead singer Kurt Cobain's suicide, and Fox announces a high-profile Aaron Spelling-produced Melrose Place spinoff for the summer, Models, Inc.
Wow, it's the Greyhound's favorite cartoon.
So many of these things would be referenced by The Simpsons in the next 2 years. That Models, is, yes. Inc., The Bridges of Madison County, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. These are all going to be references coming up.
It's long, but they're... I thought it was important to acknowledge Kurt Cobain. That was a very important moment in my little teenage life. We won't have a Simpsons show that airs around Models, Inc., but it is one of those jokes you'll never get. Because it was like 90210 and Melrose Place were kind of phenomenons. Mm-hmm. So they're like, Aaron Spelling, make another one. And then we'll have a marketing blitz to accompany this, unlike before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the marketing blitz was way bigger than the show.
It was. I remember seeing all the commercials, and it felt like super cynically engineered. It's like sexy drama, but they're all models. They're not just attractive people on camera. They're all models.
They took out the pretense of high school in an apartment complex, and like, these are just fucking models. The primetime soap opera will take place with models.
And one of the puppies thought it was one of the Models, Inc.
Yes.
Now you know, people. I'm catching you up.
We lived through Models, Inc., and we survived.
Never mention it again.
We have to in a year or so.
And at 12, Kurt Cobain's death, I mean, I noticed it, but I wasn't cool. I was listening to They Might Be Giants. I was not listening, really.
I obviously heard
the big hits of Nevermind, but honestly, the In Utero videos confused me. It made me feel uncomfortable. I was like,
I was very much into it, and I remember it very well, because I remember hearing the news, but I'm still a preteen, caught up in my own business. Somebody had one of those parties, like an adult teenage party, where someone hired a DJ and it was at a spot. There's no drinking.
Right.
Boys and girls were dancing, and I danced with my first girl the day Kurt Cobain committed suicide.
Wow.
So I wasn't thinking about it until I got home the next day, and it's like MTV was just like, no videos, just we're talking about suicide and Kurt Cobain.
We were all told by Kurt Loder about it. I just listened to this, one of my favorite audiobooks again. It was Chuck Klosterman has this whole book called Killing Yourself to Live, where he goes on a road trip around America to go to all these different sites of where famous rockers died. And he gets to the Kurt Cobain one, and it's a very interesting section where he talks about how, like, people kind of forget what people felt about Kurt Cobain before he killed himself, and that he everybody's like, Nirvana sucks, Pearl Jam's where it's at, like,
sucks.
The new
Kurt
album
Cobain,
sucks.
Kind of a dick.
Yeah,
a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't have a great upbringing, but this week's episode is Burns' Heir, and this and I think Rosebud are the two greatest Mr. Burns episodes, both in the same season, and I conflate these two all the time, even though they're very different, because it's all about an old man reaching the end of his life and realizing he needs to do something, or find something, or find some meaning, or find some way to extend his legacy.
And
but I love this episode.
There's two great Burns-focused episodes in the season, but it does feel like forever since he's been even mentioned.
It felt that way. I mean, he was in Bart's Elephant, he was riding Stampy, but the last time he was a co-focus of an episode was the Gambler episode. He was running Burns's casino, but then it becomes a Marge episode halfway through, so Burns kind of falls back, but this is all Burns.
I'm really happy to finally separate a lot of these gags and file them into the right episodes, because this is not the episode where Burns and Smithers star in a sitcom the Simpsons are watching.
That's right.
This is the episode where the Simpsons star in a sitcom that Burns is watching.
Yes.
That's true.
It's very confusing.
I do mix these up from time to time.
That is true. It is a very, like, changed focus. Mm-hmm. Once you switch the focus from Homer to Burns in the very opening, it's like you are from Burns' vision on The Simpsons, not the other way around.
Yeah, and we're both looking at it from the perspective of Burns having endless money to buy up the airwaves.
Mm-hmm. This one opens with Homer winning. Homer wins something that he thinks he would want, the employee raffle, which I have to think it's all engineered by Burns because he's watching Homer as an industrial chimney sweep, so it's just to make him suffer.
It's not practical. It's just torture. It's torturing an employee so Burns can watch it from his bathtub.
With a big bag of extra fancy potato chips.
Because it does seem too pedestrian or too low class for Burns to eat potato chips, so they have to be labeled as extra fancy.
That is literally a label they ascribe to things now, extra fancy. Fancy ketchup is still a thing, but extra fancy is something so I think at the time that joke was
it was an actual joke. And yeah, I think he's like wearing a top hat in the bathtub too.
Well, it's like Grey Poupon of chips. But I think of that joke so much too when I think of bosses not working half as hard as you, of when Homer says the guys at the top must be working even harder, and then cut to Burns in a bathtub eating fancy chips saying like, well, 5 o'clock never comes.
I mean, our guy at the top in America has had more vacation days than most of us get in a decade. So there you have it. So
I mean, he's enjoying all those workouts he's getting on the golf course, but
he's gonna drain his battery.
Okay, but speaking of a rich asshole, Burns almost drowns.
Yes, as in Blood Feud, he has a near-death experience.
He figured they would stop having any effect on him after a while.
Hey, this isn't such a great prize. Oh well, this may be a dirty job, but the big guys at the top work even harder.
Will 5 o'clock never come? Careful, Smithers, that sponge has corners, you know.
I'll go find a spherical one.
Help, Smithers. I'm sinking. Life lashing before eyes.
Is it Burns Verkoffen der Kraftwerk, where we see Smithers bathing Burns and talking to him with Snappy the alligator?
He's only washing his hair.
Okay.
And it is not, it's,
I know we've
not
seen this before.
As intimate. And also, he is helping Burns bathe when Marge paints him.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But this is him just literally in a bathtub being bathed by him, and that he's that the corners of a sponge will kill Mr. Burns.
Too
That's
sharp.
How fragile he
and
is.
We were talking the other day off mic about how Harry Shearer's, let's say, dickishness towards The Simpsons has led to... I do watch a lot of the modern-day episodes, and he is incredibly diminished.
Oh, yeah.
He says maybe one line an episode. There's no more Burns-focused episodes, but it also means for years, there has been no Burns is weak jokes. Those have not happened in maybe a decade. I'm speculating there, but like, there's not enough time to focus on him anymore.
Yeah,
but in every episode we see now, Burns is so weak, he's brought down by paper household items.
he can't give the thumbs up. He's so weak. Yeah,
I'm surprised just having that top hat on his head didn't sink him underwater. just the extra weight of the sponge.
It's too heavy. I do like how he like just jumps out of the water, immediately starts strangling Smithers.
Yes.
And the flashbacks were cute. I thought they'd dip back more into the Citizen Kane-ness of his upbringing. They really didn't.
Yes, yeah. The first two are, though, him being a baby, seemingly a baby of means, of like, no.
Yes.
He was born in a wood shed with Bobo, so somebody should pay for that blunder.
This episode is beautiful, though. Yes. I believe David Silverman directed the first act, and he had just had too much to do, and Mark Kirkland took over, but it all looks good. But if you look at the scene where Burns is firing at the man's feet, look at the background that they drew for a 5-second scene. It is so elaborate and gorgeous. Yeah. I was just in awe of these just brief glimpses of beauty in this episode.
And then we get a Greenpeace reference, which I wonder if it was directed to Sam Simon or not, or if they were thinking like Sam Simon... Later in life, the late Sam Simon, who was a co-creator of the series or co-developer, I forget exactly how he's credited, he always made money off The Simpsons, even though he left in season 3 or 4. But so he then gave a ton to Greenpeace. Like they own ships thanks to him. It's just
anti-whaling
like,
ships.
Yes, yeah.
Well, actually, the director of this episode on the commentary, Mark Kirkland, was saying, I noticed we get a lot more of these hippie flavor jokes after David Merkin took over. David Merkin is a big hippie, too. I mean, he's
true.
The reason why we have Lisa the Vegetarian.
Oh, wait, did we say who wrote this episode?
Jace Richdale,
in which I rarely get into this part of it, and you guys do. I like, that's not a name I'm familiar with, and it's his sole Simpsons writing credit. The most notably, he's the creator of the Oblongs.
Yes.
Well, he's the TV guy they brought on to work with the Oblong guy.
Co-creator of the Oblongs. The unnamed Oblong guy.
Angus Oblong,
who appears in public in clown makeup.
Wow, I had no idea.
And
but
his Wikipedia does not say his real name.
Weird, I didn't know that. Yeah, Jace Richdale's been all over TV. Even though he has one credited script on The Simpsons, he wrote a ton of jokes for two or or three seasons. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's all over this era.
He wrote for
era.
Mike Judge's The Good Family, as well as got nominated for a Writers Guild Award for an episode of Dexter.
Oh,
so
wow.
A very versatile writer.
Yeah. I thought, you know, that's something we should do a one-off of someday in the long-off future, The Good Family. Like, I never watched it, but it was supposed to be... The commercials look so interesting. It's the inverse of King of the Hill. It is the King of the Hill format, except it's... Well,
it's
actually,
hyper green.
It's the teacher. It's the teacher
it's
in
like,
Beavis and Butthead.
What, it's one of the three or four voices Mike Judge can do that he repurposes. I mean, I'm not complaining. Those voices are great. No one...
Okay.
Hank Hill is so unique.
Yes. Instead of Hank Hill being the repurposing of the Beavis and Butthead, its neighbor, they repurposed the teacher into being the hyper-hippie
Mr.
dad.
Mr. Van Driessen.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned clowns, Chris, and they mistook Burns for a clown.
All right. We're finally going to stop those corporate pigs from dumping that nuclear waste.
Oh, no, our boat is sinking.
It was I, you fools.
I love that reading.
The man you trusted isn't wavy gravy at all. And all this time, I've been smoking harmless tobacco.
And Burns just swims away.
Yeah.
He has, like, some virility or, like,
it looks
some
like some
power.
Cold water. Yeah.
He's, like, 60 there, I think.
Yeah, Bess. Like, in case you don't know who Wavy Gravy
I would
was.
Not get this joke until this summer when they did Woodstock 94, and I'm watching with my father on pay-per-view. I feel old just saying that. Taping the whole thing, only leaving to go watch The Crow in theaters. This was my life in 1994. And Wavy Gravy comes out to open up the show. And I'm like, Dad, who is Wavy Gravy? He's like, ugh. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sit down, son.
Let me try and explain who Wavy Gravy is to a child. This will make no sense.
I thought it was a Ben and Jerry's flavor.
It was.
Okay.
It was. That's how I knew Wavy
me too.
Gravy. It was Wavy Gravy had to be explained to all of us by our parents then. But he. Short version is that he was a peacenik in the 60s who was fighting like for the end of the Vietnam War, but he also was a dork who liked magic. And he said that he got arrested less when he went in clown makeup. So he became the hippie clown at protests
and
activist stuff. And
kind of like what Homer did in the Lollapalooza episode, Wavy Gravy would do for the Grateful Dead.
Well, so he became the Grateful Dead's official clown.
Yep.
That's on his wiki page. It's just like, and the official clown of the Grateful
and
Dead.
And his official website, wavygravy.net. People, do not get it confused. You might end up at an actual gravy site.
The actual gravy distributors.
And he's also like, he hasn't done cartoons. Like, he on his IMDb page, he's only appeared in like three documentaries. So it seems like he's one of those guys like, I'm not going to sell out on my celebrity. This is important.
I really love the over-the-top hippie voices. Oh no, our boat is sinking. And in the episode I Married Marge, it's established that the power plant opens in 1980, but every episode conflicts with that. Like, Burns is a nuclear power guy when Homer's mom is fighting him and things like that, and this conflicts with it, too. I'm just thinking that bit of history just kind of goes against everything.
That's true. Well, I mean, Monty Burns, back when he had the strength to do it, he just went off everywhere. He's kind of like a Scrooge McDuck figure,
he really
honestly.
Is.
Like, he just goes and has adventures.
I forget what that type of character is called, but when they have endless financial resources to finance globetrotting adventures everywhere.
And also, speaking of things that had to be explained to me, I did not recognize a bong and didn't know that the implied joke there is that Burns made them think he was smoking weed when he was smoking tobacco.
Harmless tobacco.
That's
wonderful.
That's a perfect undercut, such a subversive joke to be like, tobacco is way worse for you than weed. That is the extra joke you
That's
get.
That's great.
There.
And they let you understand it on your own. They don't have to explain it. What I really like that comes up next, Burns is talking about he never fathered an heir because of his hectic schedule and lethargic sperm. And Smithers will be buried alive with him.
Yes.
Oh,
I love that he made sure to be like, no, Smithers, the Smithers doll should be scared that he's about to be buried alive. And he's like, and it was one of those rare moments that implied that Smithers was there for any reason other than just a real love for Burns. When he goes like,
I mean, being buried alive, I think, supersedes his love of Burns.
Oh, no.
The fear of being buried alive.
I mean that it implied that has he been friendly to Burns this whole time in hopes of getting his money? Was he always into Burns' money?
Yeah. I think he still is a Burns' sexual, but the money would be nice too.
But this is one of those rare things where it's just like, oh, is he out for Burns' money? I bet he gets paid really poorly.
Yes. You've seen his apartment. It's okay.
Yes. Well, though, then again, maybe he's just pouring all that money into his Malibu Stacy collection.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I will reference that again later in here, but him popping out of the water too, like, where'd he get this second wind from to survive?
Sponge is removed.
The sponge flops off, and then he has all this power to strangle strangle Smithers with the strength of like Homer strangling Bart.
That's great animation too. Yeah. So we have up next a scene in a movie theater.
Siskel and Ebert the movie, which
two
okay
thumbs up,
joke.
Siskel and Ebert. I'll tell you what, when I saw Life Itself, the Ebert documentary, it had that joke on the marquee. Ah. Two thumbs up, Siskel and Ebert underneath Life
funny
Itself. But this,
I wish it had been two thumbs down, Siskel and Ebert. That'd be a funnier joke.
Mixed thumbs. So this THX parody was reanimated into a real THX promo.
Yes.
And when I saw a movie from like 1994 to 1997 or something, I was delighted to see a little Simpsons joke before the start of the movie.
Yeah,
when
it,
that would
it
happen.
Reanimated it in the style of the Simpsons.
Well,
in widescreen.
Yeah, they did it widescreen.
Yeah,
they did. They paid for it, like to reanimate widescreen,
yeah,
but or to at least like reformat the view on it. But
yeah,
in case you don't know, that is the THX Deep Note. THX was a sound system invented by Lucasfilm to better present sound on films, and the Deep Note
in VHS.
Yes,
it works.
Yeah, I think it's not a machine or equipment. It's a certification.
Yes. And
before anyone corrects us.
And the first time the Deep Note showed up was at the premiere of Return of the Jedi in 1983.
I was so used to seeing the movie version of this that this one went by too quick for me. It's maybe 5 or 7 seconds longer in the reanimated version.
Yes.
They let the gag sit a little bit longer, but they're all the same and they're all there.
It's crazy that they would keep in the gag that the head explodes.
I love
just
that.
Like that it's an on-screen death in The Simpsons, which feels like a line to cross, but it was so fast of just like teeth chatter, heads explode. And it was something, as a kid, I didn't love that THX sound. It was just like,
it was meant to be intentionally jarring, as in this can only be done with this process.
Yeah,
it played before The Simpsons movie, apparently.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, every time Grandpa Simpson said, turn it up, everyone in the theater laughed.
That's,
every time that promo played.
It's a great joke, though.
Turn it up!
I have to tell you, Tiny Toons did this joke 2 years earlier.
I confuse these two all the time, because back when I first got the internet, the best thing you could do is download Simpsons waves and waves of things that you loved. And if we didn't say it, the THX is named after George Lucas's student film Gone Good, THX 1138.
Wasn't it filmed at our local BART stations? Those are our train stations, by the way.
It was a student film that then became a real film starring Robert Duvall. It was in the Tiny Toons direct-to-video movie How I Spent My Summer Vacation.
Oh, boy,
the most gorgeous Tiny Toons has ever looked.
This is like a Studio Ghibli version of Tiny Toons.
Yes, it is by TMS, their best animation team. But this is the exact same joke 2 years earlier.
I think I had downloaded a wave that combined the two.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, instead of THX, it was THUD. That's what our listeners couldn't see.
Thud, and made by Mucusfilm.
Oh,
I get it.
That's a bit spicy for my Tiny Toons movie. So we have to talk about this reference that was even lost to time in 1994.
Well, all right. I didn't know this either, but so Burns is just in a field talking about his heir to everybody. And, well, why don't we play the clip first?
Hello, I am Montgomery Burns. Now then. I'm looking for a suitable young male heir to leave my fortune to when I pass away. My vast, vast, vast fortune. Vast. Auditions will be tomorrow at my estate. And now, a feature presentation. Oh, very well. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Get ourselves some snacks.
Good dancing by Burns.
This did not go over my head at the time, because I was very much obsessed with this, this hyper obscure reference at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I knew what they were referencing, but I'm like, wow, this is like really obscure, especially 18 months later.
After the film had bombed horribly.
Yeah.
So the film is Toys. It was a mega bomb.
It was a passion project between Robin Williams and his frequent co-collaborator, Barry Sonnenfeld. It's a movie about Robin Williams runs a toy factory with a robotic Joan Cusack and a militarily inclined LL Cool J. His brother ends up inheriting his toy company and turning it into something that manufactures military video games. It is visually unforgettable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks great. I saw it as a kid in theaters, but I didn't know what to think.
I'll stand up for that movie forever. It seemed to understand video games a little more than most other films at the time, because they clearly made an engine that made a video game. It wasn't a cartoon showing a video game. And I remember magazines like, is this a real thing? This looks like a convincing video game.
Right.
And at the same time, toys got a bunch of fucking video games.
And they're all bad.
They're all bad.
So it was a very unconventional movie with a very unconventional trailer. Maybe Henry can explain what the trailer was.
So just the same as Burns is standing in a field in that costume, Robin Williams in his character costume from Toys, though pretty much playing Robin Williams, is Robin Williams telling you about the movie in just a field somewhere. And it's just like, it looks like a camera in a field, just riff away, Robin.
He's literally standing in the, I want to speculate, the Windows XP background. Because Robin Williams is a North Bay dude, and we cannot get too far into this because I've done it on a bunch of other Laser Times, but this movie was part of the fallout with Robin Williams and Disney over Aladdin, because he had been trying to get this movie made with Barry Sonnenfeld the whole time, which is why this trailer is so weird. And there's two of them that's just Robin Williams riffing in a field.
Because
this
was his passion project.
Yes, looked like it was shot on his home turf, just him being him. It's a very unconventional trailer for something he was really proud of, and he had to dye his hair blonde repeatedly.
Hmm. Yeah. According to this trailer, though, he says he's inside a giant soundstage. I don't know if that's a joke.
It's a joke.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I couldn't tell. I was like, maybe he is.
Let's hear some of it.
I don't know about you, but that last trailer... I've seen it, you know, fast cutting, big music. What about a different kind of trailer? I'm Robin Williams, here on the world's largest soundstage at 20th Century Fox. That's right. This entire wheat field is in one building. I'm here tonight to talk to you about an incredible movie, Toys.
Toys! Trailer! Toys! There'll be a big lettered thing up here above me, glowing. Obviously, some incredible special effect that'll go dun 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 toys.
I mean, okay, I was stupid for thinking it was a fake field.
I want people who have been listening to our other shows where I've talked about why he was mad at Disney over Aladdin, because this Robin Williams, for the trailers, is literally standing as himself hyping a movie. This is how much behind Toys he was, and he blamed its failure on Disney marketing Aladdin as a Robin Williams movie at the exact same time.
Yes.
One of the promises they promised not to do with their handshake deal where he got $75,000 to be the genie in Aladdin, and please do not market this against our Toys movie. I want this Toys movie to succeed.
Though, honestly, Toys wouldn't have succeeded no matter what he did.
Either way.
But it didn't help that Aladdin was the better Robin Williams film.
Yes.
But it's an incredibly
ambitious film, and it's incredibly watchable, too, but not what you'd call good.
It's weird as hell. And this means a lot to me, this bit, because in high school, I was friends with a huge Simpsons nerd like I was, and we would just see each other in the hallway and just say, "Fast." And that'd be it. That'd be the joke. Yeah.
Fast. And then the end of the Burns clip, I never saw Let's Go to the Lobby thing,
never.
A real one, but I'd only see it later when it was parodied and shit. And like the Aqua Teen Hunger Force thing had a great one in it. And it's in Grindhouse. They basically have that. We saw the fancier ones when we were kids of like, no, it's a polygonal popcorn exploding.
But you're on a roller coaster of snacks.
All the messages were the same.
It still
exists. Shit.
Go buy snacks. It's awesome that, yes, this one has been replaced, but this still exists in every movie theater you go to.
Everybody knows this song.
And Burns says snacks instead of treats, but I don't know why. Maybe they're just misremembering. Let's hear the original.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go...
What I want to speculate is that this lasted so long in the pop culture zeitgeist because I want to say it was played in drive-ins for much longer than it would have played in a normal theater.
Probably. It was just like your stock go-to-the-lobby announcement you could buy.
I think what killed those videos, too, is that, like, you didn't see a Coca-Cola...
Yeah. Coke now finances all AMC's. Yeah. You've definitely seen it.
It is weird to see a refreshments commercial that isn't Coca-Cola, you know? And so, like, the dad in it is drinking out of a nondescript cup. Mm-hmm. Just a cup.
And just like in the actual source material, Burns is dancing with a bunch of refreshments and stuff. But they're people in costumes, not cartoon characters.
The lip sync is better in The Simpsons than it is in the original one.
So, no one knows a lot about where this animation came from, other than that it was done by Dave Fleischer, Fleischer Studios.
Oh, interesting.
Pioneer Betty Boop and Popeye. Stretchy and floppy like Fleischer.
But yeah, what year and where it originated is very flimsy.
Wow. That's
neat, interesting. Right?
One last joke I liked in the trailer bit is Homer's reaction to seeing Burns. He screams like Burns just walked into the room, but he's just like,
Also, Burns can sense that no one is reacting within the trailer. That's why he goes, fast.
And just looking at the wiki, there's a joke about this in the brand new Injustice 2.
Oh, wow.
As of right now. That's how long this joke has lasted, from 1950 to 2017. And I don't think I've ever seen this on a movie screen.
I never have. I've only seen
parodies. You see this, like, interstitials in between, like, commercials that use stock footage.
In Grindhouse they did put it in. In the 4-hour presentation of Grindhouse, it is in there.
I only see old movies in theaters now since I live in the big city, but I think I've seen this spliced in for fun. Just like, here's a fun little, like, you know, interstitial for you to watch. So that's the only time I've seen it, I think.
So then we go to Burns' place, and first off, it's in the Lillian Langtree Theater.
I looked it up.
Lillian
Langtree, 1853 to 1929. She was a starlet of the stage, and she was known for dating noblemen and close friends with Oscar Wilde.
Wow.
So a very famous starlet of her time. Of course, Burns would be in love with her.
Yes. And again, died in 1929. So even you're to think Burns is just 80 then, he would have fallen in love with her when she was like, when she was 80.
Yes.
So it's a great old-timey joke there.
I think they're subtly aging up Burns a bit.
Oakley Weinstein, they are such devotees to the Simpsons canon, but when they made him 104 in Homer the Smithers, I was like, no, he'd been like 81 just a few seasons ago.
Yeah, that was a revelation, but I was like, he is appropriately 104.
He should be 104. I prefer 104-year-old Burns, but I'm just saying, if you care about the canon.
I think if you date him from what we saw in Rosebud, he would be in his 90s, based on how old George Burns was compared to him.
His taste in boxing and baseball would put him as born in the early 1800s.
Well, he'd be 170.
He was a fan of the Negro Leagues.
He claims to see sporting events that were never televised.
Yes.
So then the kids are all auditioning, which leads to my favorite Milhouse line ever. I think this is, I've said it a number of times, half ironically.
Well, I have nothing to offer you but my love.
I specifically said no geeks.
But my mom says I'm cool.
Next.
Give me your fortune or I'll pound your withered old face in.
Ooh, I like his energy. Put him on the callback list.
Clang, clang, clang with the trolley. Ring, ring, ring with the bell. Zing, zing, zing with my heartstrings.
Thank you.
I love this. I love the sound of the wind getting knocked out of like,
thank you.
So, well, first off, my mom says I'm cool.
That's great.
I love that line. Yeah. And it is what a dork says, that he's like, who has no friends, who's just like, but my mom says I'm cool.
Henry once again coming out as Milhouse.
I tweeted when I got to sit with the Milhouse at Universal Orlando, and I tweeted out the picture of it. I said, our moms think we're cool. And my mom took that picture.
This is what it's like when doves cry.
Yes.
So this song, obviously it is a gay joke because Martin is singing a show tune, but it is also super gay. It's a show tune about falling in love with a man you see on the trolley.
Well, he got punched in the stomach before you heard if he changes the gender. I bet he didn't.
Yeah, I don't think he would have. But
his outfit is of the trolley conductor, though the singer is a young lady who has fallen in love with a man on the way to the World's Fair, the 1904 World's Fair.
It's true. This is from the musical Meet Me in St. Louis,
and the movie version with
a beautiful young Judy Garland before Hollywood destroyed her.
it's on its way to destroy her, but she hasn't been destroyed yet. I love this song so much.
And she's probably hopped up on goofballs singing this song.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding, ding went the bell. Zing, zing, zing went my heartstrings. From the moment I saw him, I fell.
I want to skip ahead to my knees.
Stop went the wheels. Stop, stop, stop went my heartstrings. As he started to go, then I started to know how it feels.
All right, Henry.
This is not... you, which...
Are you Milhouse or Martin Prince? Which one is it?
A little column A, a little column B.
I'm both of them. That's
yeah,
my secret.
I want to say this was like a nostalgia piece for the early 20th century. It was made like in the 30s, like the
yes.
original musical, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it's, well, it was written for the movie. Like, it wasn't it was an original movie musical. It
oh, I didn't
not,
know that. Okay.
It was not based on a musical.
Okay,
so.
But it's still like a nostalgia piece for that
yes,
era of America.
And that's the second most famous song in the movie. The Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is also in
oh,
that.
Oh, that's
from
Meet Me in St. Louis. Wow,
yes,
okay.
And
I'm going to say Louie because that's how the song goes. Meet
Louis?
Me in St. Louis,
Meet
Louis,
me in St.
Meet
Louis?
Me at the fair.
Oh. But that song was nominated for Best Song that year at the Oscars mm-hmm. and lost to Swing from a Star. Oh,
if
you
like
the
this week,
baby,
sir, yeah. carry would, moonbeams home.
That would be the theme for a really bad sitcom in the 80s.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. I love the trolley song, and this is my introduction to it, though it's also let me know that, like, if you're a man singing this song, you're gay and should be punched. Like that's
yeah,
the,
it's a weird message to send. But
the bullies are wrong for bullying him. Yeah. You are supposed to laugh at the bullying, and it's sad that like Martin gets punished. That the constant jokes are like Martin's gay and he's a gay kid who doesn't realize
yeah.
how gay he is. Perhaps
I think they're on Martin's side. It's like the cruel reality of life.
Yes.
They won't let him be gay. They won't let yeah. him be effeminate.
Yeah, but can you at least take some solace in how far we've come? Because now that
oh, yeah.
joke is ascribed to like if you were unironically singing a Smash Mouth song and enjoying. yourself, then you would be punched in 2017.
Yes, that's true.
It would not be a musical that would be mocked. No,
that's
but
true.
But I mean, you could not in 1994. You could not have a gayer reference than a Judy Garland song being sung.
Yes.
I think it would change up a little more later.
Well,
but,
we do get next Bart auditioning, and I think this is Homer at his stupidest, where he
yes.
cannot put a sentence together, and he forgets his boss's name.
Well, first off, Lisa says she.
Oh, right.
In our phallocentric society, and then Byrne says, "I don't know what phallocentric means." Miriam Webster describes it as centered on or emphasizing the masculine viewpoint.
Uh-huh.
So that's what phallocentric means, in
and
case you're always
phallus
gaze.
Is a dick-shaped object.
That also Burns is true. He did say no girls in the trailer. He
yeah.
said
oh, you're right.
Male heir.
I see.
Like,
that's
did.
Right.
He made it very clear. But then, okay, wait, no. We also have to talk about Lee Majors. I didn't get Lee Majors in this clip. So
I love that clip.
Marge, I like that Marge, for once, is like, you know, we should just get his money so you can go to a good school.
Yeah.
And it felt like one of the Dave Merkin is one of the rare showrunners who did not go to Harvard.
That's
on
true.
The Simpsons. So when he's making fun of Harvard, I wonder if he's just like, oh, it's all these fucking Harvard guys around me. I'm sick of this shit. And so the line of like, you went to the most expensive and therefore best school there is.
I feel like it's also a very naive mom viewpoint where it's like,
yes.
of course this is the best school. It costs the most money.
It's Harvard. And
yeah.
I like that Marge is thirsty for Lee Majors.
Yes.
I like that it gives her something extra instead of just being the mom who says, I care about money, I care about the groceries, I care about my kids. She's also like, she's been in love with Lee Majors since her childhood.
Yeah, and in case you're not 50, we should tell you, Lee Majors is the $6 million man, when $6 million was a lot of money.
Yes.
And that was a show in the 70s, and the intro will tell you what happened.
Steve Austin, astronaut.
What?
A man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man.
We're good. So yeah, they rebuild a broken astronaut, and that's
our tax
basically
dollars
it.
Getting wasted right
yes.
there.
And Marge was obsessed with Kathleen Turner's former husband.
Oh yeah,
and well, that's $6 million. That's nothing in government waste. I'm not going to tell you about that. But
they'd buy a hammer with that money.
But I love the. I also like that when they have the sound effect the second time, it's slightly quieter
it's so
because
good.
You're like
yeah.
hearing it
you're,
out. It was rare.
It's so loud you're hearing it from inside Marge's head.
And it was the rare moment of people staring at Marge
yeah.
and them. Going like, what are you doing?
And then just moving on, yeah.
But then Homer gives Bart a script to read in his audition, and it is like the stupidest Homer has been. Homer is maybe has a second grade level of reading skills to write this.
Marge really should have went over this card, seeing
really
as she believed
have.
In this idea.
Hello, Mr. Kearns. I bad want money now. Me sick.
Ooh, he card reads good.
So pick, please, me. Mr. Burns.
It's Kearns, stupid!
No, it's not.
Disregard.
Disregard.
That's my favorite line of the entire show.
It's Kearns! Yeah,
it's Kearns. All right,
it's more like, ooh, he card read good.
Yeah.
That's the joke.
I want to get my own line of the show.
Oh, all right, fine.
Coming
well,
soon.
My line of the show was My Mom Says I'm Cool, but I didn't do the audio for this one. But the boot kicking Bart, all the work needed for it, and the Bart would seriously just stand there still while it all happened.
All of Burns's traps require you to be in a very specific place.
Well, and it's a pretty, I never read it as a callback until this viewing, but Bart being told move a little to the left to be kicked by the boot, he will tell Burns to do the same thing at the end of the episode.
That's a nice callback.
So it's a nice kind of revenge on Bart's part, though he already got his revenge.
Yeah.
But oh, actually, you know what? This Homer's.
That's my line of the show.
Here. Yeah, okay. Well, let's play that jingle again then.
That's the joke.
I think of this whenever I fail.
I think Bart and Lisa are feeling a little upset right now. Isn't there something you'd like to say?
There sure is. Kids, you tried your best and you failed miserably. The lesson is. Never try.
And yes,
never
if I revealed how I, when I was quiet for a year and started talking, I kind of talk like that.
I need to unlearn that lesson, though. Like, I took that as too seriously as a kid. I was like, well, I know Homer's bad, but maybe you should never try. What if you fail?
Trying rules.
I think, I mean, we are in the podcast biz. Our life is nothing but risks and risk-taking, so we have to try
the
constantly.
Crowdfunding podcast, beeswax.
Yeah, we're trying all the time, baby. Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
Shakira, Zootopia, try everything.
Yeah!
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Then I liked Burns reflecting in sadness that he's going to give all his money to the Egg Council Advisory Board, which is the first of two Egg Council jokes in the Merkin era.
That's true.
The second will be Lenny bringing up the egg thing. Homer, in Stonecutters, Homer doesn't let Lenny eat an egg, and he tells him that cholesterol actually isn't as bad as eggs. And I finally was able to finally pinpoint it. So there was no Egg Council Board in America. It was the American Egg Board, which invented the incredible edible egg. I always think of the intentionally bad
Mr. Show
joke of Bob Odenkirk going, the incredible edible rump roast, which is not a joke, but no, it's funny, like, in how it's not a joke.
Yeah.
It's just a lame thing somebody would say at a dinner party. The Egg Council was created then because eggs were getting a bad rap lately, because cholesterol was then the bad thing in the health craze. And it was like, well, eggs are pure cholesterol. And so, as has happened with pork and beef and tons of other things, cheese.
Yeah.
You'll get all these ads that are just like, please just buy this thing that nobody directly owns. Just stop.
To me, it's incredible and says something about the opulence and longevity of those industries. That milk and pork at this period just had advertisements for nobody's product in particular. Just please keep doing this. We have a lot of money to spend on commercials.
Well, in beef's and milk too. But in beef's case, they were doing it because of the Oprah mad cow stuff. I was trying to find incredible edible eggs that bring up the cholesterol thing, and I finally did. Most of the ones I found were for kids, but this one finally addresses the cholesterol thing.
1989 government research shows eggs have 22% less cholesterol than we thought.
Ooh, you gotta love it, the incredible edible egg.
Holy shit.
Eggs are safe again, people. Come back to the eggs.
And I found that on a great YouTube video, which is 30 minutes of commercials from October 28th, 1993.
Wow, you had to dig pretty deep.
But they're all from local. It's all from local in New York. So it's national commercials, and then it goes to Rudy Giuliani is running a new campaign. But anyway, I could just fall down that rabbit hole of like, oh, God, just watch 30 minutes of old commercials.
So there's one other Egg Council joke that they cut.
Oh,
it was in
yes.
Itchy and Scratchy, the movie, where Homer is lamenting what Bart will become, and he says, judge at a Mr. Tight Buns competition. The original line was, on the board of the Egg Council.
That's
and
right.
They cut the joke because it didn't read correctly. People are like, the Egg Council? What's that?
I remember.
So,
that's right. Mr. Tight Buns competition is kind of funny.
It's a funnier joke, I think. I don't know why the Egg Council would be evil, but there you go.
They were just sick of the Egg Council in the Simpsons writing room, man.
Too much egg propaganda
in the
world.
I like that Burns refuses to accept that rock isn't a bird.
Yes.
He's like, well, let's see what the people in the lab say about that. And then Bart is getting his revenge and is having some pretty, like, fun Dennis the Menace-y revenge on him.
It's really elaborate on the moment prank to spur the moment.
And I love him pulling my favorite is the no solicitors sign, and then the solicitors, 20 of them, immediately show up with like mops and briefcases. That's when he decides to make Bart his heir. There's a Christmas Carol joke, which even as a kid, I got.
I got that one.
Tell what day it is. And Bart concusses Smithers, and Burns doesn't give a shit.
Within 3 minutes of this episode, two people collapse like a pile of bricks with amazing Foley. It's just great. Sounds so painful.
And Homer will do it later in this episode, too.
Like, oh, my God, yeah.
A lot of concussions happening in this. And so once Burns has made it official, the family is ready to celebrate.
Just sign here, and your son will stand to inherit my entire estate.
Woohoo! We're rich! Bart, get over to the mansion and open up all the windows. You want to get the old people smell out before we move in.
Dad, Mr. Burns hasn't passed away yet.
Huh? Oh, right. So I guess you're in okay shape, huh? No heart problems or anything.
Will I?
Boo! Oh, yes! I'm okay.
What a cheat that they have Abe just like, I'm okay.
Well, the funny thing is he's standing with them when Burns leaves like 2 seconds later. Yes. So he really is okay.
I wonder if they had to put that in and be like, no, he really is okay.
Yeah.
Like that Homer tries to kill Burns. Like that's, but then again, I mean, it's Burns. It's okay, I think, for Homer to do that.
And Homer has another push her down, son. Like, let's push him down the stairs.
Let's push him down the stairs. Though the stalking Chef Boyardee joke, I think that's a little cheap.
It is a little cheap, but I do like how Homer and Bret Hart don't like old man stink in their homes.
That's true. You got to air that out of Burns' mansion. I agree. And then, but just Homer's like, let's push him down the stairs. Like, he's so happy to do that. So Bart goes, humors Mr. Burns, goes to his house and eats there, and I like that Burns just has a button on his chair to lock up a person who's eating with him, and that he calls himself a boogeyman.
One joke I got for the first time, or just noticed for the first time, was like, oh, your milk is getting cold.
Oh.
He was drinking warm milk with his dinner.
Oh, yeah. My God, I didn't get that. That is such an old man thing.
It really is. Like, it helps with your digestion.
Oh, my God.
I know this because when I go home, my parents serve me milk. I drink it and then shit down my pants.
Oh, yeah.
Not in my pants, down.
I gave it milk,
Henry.
Too.
Yes. No, I agree. I had some milk. I had some ice cream last night and woke up with stomach issues. And I was like, boy, I got to stop with this ice cream. I just kind of got to drop it.
It's very strange.
Then Bart. Also, this is when I found out that gelatin was made with hooves. And though it never really sunk in until I had like a vegetarian friend when I was 18. And I would just say, like, okay, we're going to eat this. And she would say, well, is there gelatin in it? I was like, what? Well, who cares? Like, it's gelatin. That's not animals. She's like, there's cow hooves in it. And
anything with gelatin, yeah.
And obviously, as a younger person, I was one of many people that question a vegetarian's choice every time they say they don't want to eat something. And just like, all right, you're on trial right now. Like, are you sure you don't want to eat this? I think you should.
I got to tell you, as a vegetarian, we love that. So you eat that, but you won't eat that? Yes, it's my decision. Please,
I know you thought this was a dinner, but this is a trial.
Objection.
What about my diet bothers you so much?
What I like about the Burns things is he says it's made of hooves as if it would be more appealing to Bart. Yes. Like, it's so good. It's got hooves in it.
We probably
like,
should have looked up what gelatin was made of before that. Was it even grosser?
He seems to think that gelatin also is like a crazy new thing. Like, oh, kids love gelatin. And so then Bart says what he would really want. And it's when Bart discovers the benefits of having Mr. Burns' bankroll.
Oh, if you stay, you can have anything you want to eat. Even some sort of gelatin dish. It's made from hooves, you know.
Anything, huh? Okay. I want pizza. And I want it delivered by Krusty the Clown.
Hey, it's Krusty the Pizza Man! All right, where's my $400?
Hey, wait. How can you be here when your show's on live?
I just threw on an old rerun. No one will know the difference. Children, remain calm. The Falkland Islands have just been invaded. I repeat, the Falklands have just been invaded. The disputed islands lie here off the coast of Argentina.
I love that crusty. So that was April 2nd, 1982. Quite an old rerun.
I still love it because the joke's awesome, but it's not even the oldest clip of Krusty we've seen.
No.
I mean, at that time, I feel like Bozo the Clown could have also pulled up any episode from 20 years of its
history.
Anything
in color.
Yeah.
Let's see what adventures Popeye gets into.
The only difference you would have told in a Bozo episode is just like, well, that kid's wearing a t-shirt a kid today wouldn't wear. Like, that kid has an Evil Knievel shirt, and they'd be wearing an Optimus Prime shirt.
And it's funny that, A, he has a map ready, but B, he's telling the children to remain calm. Like, this would affect no one in America. Yes. It was a small-scale conflict between the United Kingdom and Argentina over land. It was like the end of the decline of the British Empire. It's like one of the few things they had left.
It was a 10-week war. Argentina lost, but it was a time when, like, small operations like that were seen as like, oh, that's what wars are. I guess this replaces world wars. We're just going to see these little things, like these smaller things, which are not deadly. They were, like, people died in them, but this in Afghanistan, they were like side wars as opposed to the Iraq war, which was a war-ass war.
And will never end.
Yeah, like all wars will never end.
Yes, so
we're still
next
in South Korea, ain't we?
Up next, we have another Lost Time reference, a reference to the movie Sliver from 1993 that I recall watching this. It was a very eye-opening moment for young Bob. It was a very horny movie.
Yes, well, I recorded it and rewound and fast-forwarded several times.
Yeah, I mean, Sharon Stone, right after Basic Instinct, her next sexy thriller, if you will.
Sliver came at the very weird... This happened several times where erotic thrillers came back into theaters. There was a thing in the 70s where there were films like Emmanuel and The Story of O that were just these like foreign films that were sexy and basically were the equivalent of a Skinamax film then. Yeah. And Sliver just was Skinamax with a budget. And then Skinamax film would just rip off all the Sharon Stone films. And so after Basic Instinct... this was her next one, and it was voyeurism, the movie. Like, and it was an erotic thriller of like watching people have sex or take baths. And
you want to watch Alec Baldwin's brother jerk off to security camera footage set to Enigma music.
Which Baldwin is
Billy
this?
Baldwin?
Billy Baldwin,
the worst Baldwin, I'd say
the lost Baldwin. Yeah.
I mean, Alec's not so much better. He vote closer to how I would vote.
Alec's way better. You're probably thinking of Steven.
Steven.
Steven's pretty.
Who's the Biodome guy?
Steven.
I get Billy and Biodome mixed up. Was it Steven or William who was on 30 Rock playing Alec Baldwin in a movie or playing Jack Donaghy in a movie?
I don't know. That could have been Danny. He looks the most like him.
But in this movie, the Baldwin in question has basically a camera in every room in this high...
He's a landlord at a high-end apartment.
Yeah, in New York.
And he's watching Sharon Stone. And one of the things I will say about it, ladies love these movies. And this is one of those movies that had a much more famous soundtrack. And has a bunch of... It looks like one of my girlfriend's playlists at this point. UB40.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Enigma. I wasn't joking about that. That really happened.
But I feel like Showgirl... This was also written by Joe Esterhaus.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
And it was... He, for a brief period, was the superstar film scriptwriter. Scriptwriters are never famous, but everybody was like, it would be the story in Variety. They paid... X millions of dollars to Joe Esterhaus for his next thing.
Yeah.
And that eventually collapsed when they paid the most money for Showgirls.
That's what did it, right?
And it was a mega flop. Yeah. And it was... I mean, Showgirls also ended these erotic thrillers that are in theaters. And I think people realize, like... The people who jerk off to this don't want to be in a regular movie theater watching this. They want to watch it on premium cable channels and jerk off at night.
Yeah, or wait till it comes to HBO or whatever.
I did.
Exactly. That's what they were for, and you didn't need big budget things for that. And it also became a thing of like actresses on the level of Sharon Stone. You either needed to find a famous actress who was like, yeah, I'll be naked for 20 minutes, or you had to find non-famous actresses who would be naked that
much. It was a point of topic at the time. What's Sharon Stone's first movie going to be without a nude scene?
Even
when it was like inappropriate, like, we don't want to see you. No one wants to see Sylvester Stallone fuck anybody.
I know I don't.
You got to see a bit of his penis in that other movie. What was that one?
Specialist.
Oh, the Specialist. You're welcome. That's right. Yes, thank you.
Go out and rent it today, folks.
For some reason, I remember Stallone being in Sliver. But yeah, couched in the Sliver references are then two other movie references.
That's true.
Are you talking to me? There's no one else here. You must be talking to me. Well, that was an antique. Crap!
Moe, does a scene from Taxi Driver.
Yes, Moe is very much in The Simpsons. He is a Travis Bickle character,
really
a dangerous loner who hates everyone.
Yeah, a simmering madman.
This is the actual clip, and if you'll notice, like, it is much more low key than any impression of it ever is.
All the impressions are
like,
so.
What we're
going to
say,
top.
But what I always say about Edward G. Robinson, like, he never did. He never did that.
He was much more subdued.
You talking to me? That's how you seen this impression done. It's nothing like that.
This is Dirty Grandpa himself in 1976.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Well, then who the hell else are you talking? You talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here. Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
Finally has power with that gun.
Yeah.
He's got guns on like drawer rollers up his sleeves that he can thrust out.
A lot of copycat criminals did that.
I mean, to this day, I think the entire gun industry is based off of this attitude that everyone is after you and you must protect yourself at all costs with lethal force.
Even if you have to destroy your antique mirror.
Yes.
Ah, crap.
This is the power that Travis Bickle and Mo feels when they buy a gun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually the reaction to Taxi Driver is why Martin Scorsese, it's why he made King of Comedy, because he saw that there were Travis Bickle imitators, which he absolutely did not want to create with Taxi Driver. And so then he wanted to show a different type of crazy obsessive, but the biggest loser in the world who lives in his mom's basement. He's like, no, these are the people. You're not Travis Bickle. You're a dude in your basement who kidnaps Jerry Lewis.
It's so great. He puts on his own fake talk shows with cardboard cutouts. Oh, man, what a great movie that really gets overlooked.
Yeah. And it's also the point of it is, too, that Rupert Pupkin becomes really famous at the end, that it's more of his point, too, of like, no, you'll be super famous if you do this. And watch those together. Watch Taxi Driver
and
King of Comedy together. They are response films to each other. And
you synthesize those two, Robert De Niro's, and you get me.
Well, and when you see, this was the first time I noticed the other videos on there.
Okay.
Like that it's Jacques kissing Edna Krabappel. So a return of Jacques. And then a real sellout of Lovejoy's character. Like he's just like guzzling like wine or something.
I wasn't looking at the little monitors. I should have been, really.
Well, it's right in the center underneath Mo is Wiggum in the bathtub, which felt like a very direct. Well, it's Sharon Stone in the bathtub and Sliver, and this is Wiggum in the bathtub.
The Sliver trailer has Sharon Stone in the bathtub, and it's like in the 90s, if a woman was in the bathtub, she was masturbating. I mean, we had three of those jokes in season 3 of The Simpsons, a woman being in a bathtub masturbating.
I feel like Duckman did that joke every other episode.
Yes.
But that I also like that Burns directly credits Sliver.
What a delightful rump.
And then we get something I never even knew was a movie reference to looking this up, but it really is that Homer eating flowers, which is just a weird thing of like, Homer eats so many disgusting things, but that
bath his mysterious soaps. Trips to Holland.
His secret thing is that he eats flowers, and
is that a reference to something?
It
or just
is.
The, okay,
Lotus
thank you.
So, in the 1987 film, which I've actually never seen, The Last Emperor by Bernardo Bertolucci, that film is about the last emperor of China before the People's Revolution, the communists took over, and he was the final emperor who actually got like kind of converted over to communism, and it's an interesting film. And in the film, he marries the last empress in it, and she's kind of ignored even at her own wedding because he's with a mistress of his, and so she just starts eating flowers, and she starts eating the like flower arrangements, and it's this thing to show her descent into madness, and it's just a long shot of an actress that feels like he just told this actress, eat flowers. And so,
flowers are edible, I think. Yeah. Some of them. I've had them in salads and stuff like that.
You're not supposed to not eat flowers. Like they are. They're just plants, but they're just pretty plants that don't really have like nutritional value.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They don't taste particularly great, but there's nothing against it. So anyway, now you know that flower eating is directly from The Last Emperor, which there are no clips of it I could find, but also it was just like silence. It's like eating flowers doesn't make much sound in The Last Emperor. So then Bart has learned all the benefits of being Burns' heir, that there's a, you know, for all intents and purposes, bottomless pit.
Yes.
And that he can fling peas at Smithers all he wants. And Homer finally puts his foot down not over abusing Lisa, but over a much more important problem.
Oh, yuck, meatloaf. My most hated of all loaves.
That was the end piece. That's it. Being abusive.
gossip to your family is one thing, but I will not stand idly by and watch you feed a hungry dog. Go to your room!
No! This family stinks! Mr. Burns nurtures my destructive side. I'm suffocating here!
Art, you listen!
I'll go eat some flowers.
My secret chain. My secret chain.
It's a small joke, but I like Lisa saying, oh, that was a big one when that's their peas are coming at her. Yeah.
Like that. That's a big one. Felt kind of real the way he goes, Bart, you listen? Like, he's actually really upset.
That's some
about
real
it.
Anger. Good job, Dan.
And that he's holding the flower when Bart walks away, too. And somehow Bart gets really ahead of Homer on his bike, even though Homer is right behind him in his car. And I like, it felt almost like for more for the commercials where Burns is like, maybe even love him. Get him off me. Get him off me. But now he's his son. And when Homer arrives, he runs over Bart's bicycle like it's nothing. And then we get to probably the biggest deleted scene in Simpsons history, which I did get the clip for it.
Only because it eventually wasn't deleted.
Yeah, it got put in 138.
Played in syndication as much as anything else.
And, well, so let's hear the clip first. This is both the one that's in the episode and then a bit of the deleted scene in case you don't know what was deleted.
Or what? You release the dogs or the bees or the dogs with bees in their mouth and when they bark, they shoot bees at you? Well, go ahead. Do your worst.
He locked the door.
Do your worst.
My worst, eh? Smithers, release the robotic Richard Simmons.
Quiet, big boys. Hit the butter off those buns.
So for the longest time, I thought, oh, man, I can't believe they didn't put that joke in. But now I'm like, I like the he locked the door joke better.
Yes.
It's less monkey cheese zaniness, although I like how it becomes a Terminator parody, too, later when they shoot a shotgun at Richard Simmons' head.
Again, two references mixed together that little Chris got.
Yes, I liked both of those when I finally saw that robotic Richard Simmons in the 138th episode, spectacular. Mm-hmm. But that he locked the door is it feels more like what Simpsons was at that time of just
rather than like the Richard Simmons joke is an easy target along the line of nude pictures of Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah,
like, the kind of sub Jay Leno shit that doesn't hold up real well.
A little mean spirited, a little like random humor. Kind
I mean,
of stuff.
It was not just The Simpsons. Richard Simmons was the easiest target you could take, which is why it feels like a bummer for The Simpsons. Yes. Like they should have been somebody they were personally annoyed
and that,
by.
That was the feeling behind the scenes too. Like in not on this commentary, but on the Oakley and Weinstein commentary for 138th episode. They're very clear that like there was a divide in the writers' room
when that footage
came back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people were like, "This is really funny. This is really well animated. What a great scene!" And other people were like, "This is beneath the Simpsons.
Yeah,
Richard Simmons jokes is not what we're about." And there's not really, other than him being a robot and a Terminator, it's just a joke about like Richard Simmons, which like people were doing that in like fucking 87.
His ass was going to explode.
And that's I don't know. And this has very little to do with now, you know, Richard Simmons withdrawing from society that he once loved so much.
I think he wants to be left alone. Yeah. I don't think it's so.
But he was a hack punchline.
Yeah,
I think like at this point that should have been Steve Allen. That would have been a funny joke.
Yeah,
it was funny to see him go on Letterman so much because he would just go on Letterman to be made fun of to make Dave like nervous and annoyed.
Yeah,
that he could do slightly effeminate jokes that Dave could like make a face at it. And
easy now, Richard Simmons is not out.
But Richard Simmons, I'm sure, loves women very much.
There was that podcast about him, and they were like, "Where is Richard Simmons?" He's like, "I'm okay, just leave me alone.
Yeah, please leave me alone. I stopped talking to you. All right, leave me alone." But that. Yeah, 1994, went to the oldies, like it was still around, but it was just kind of old. And, and it's not fair to the like, Richard Simmons wanted people to lose weight. What a bad guy. And he's just kind of in okay shape, and he's a fitness guru who's just in okay shape.
But he's also a shameless self-promoter that the whole world was aware of him, and he's very loud and brash.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't think he had
to sell that fucking deal-a-meal system to people.
He's
man.
I don't believe there's an anti-gay joke in here. I don't believe there's a body-shaming joke in here.
I don't think so either.
Him being an annoying iconic person of the late 80s.
It's low-hanging fruit, I think.
It is. That's what I hate about it.
But the animation is so good in it, and it's so well done that I would have, if it had been my call, even though I think he shut the door is much funnier, I would have been like, boy, they put so much work into this. the world not see this would not be fair.
I think that's why the 138th episode spectacular was the way it was. They're like, we want to show you the things that we spent time and money and all these resources on that are otherwise buried because there's no DVDs in 1995. They have to show them to you some way.
And on the commentary, Merkin almost has kind of like in his response to the people who wanted it deleted, which obviously they won in the end, that he said before 138, they took when he would go on college tours of like Simpsons guy goes to your college and they'd show deleted scenes. He said that one got huge reactions every time.
Oh, and one final thing on this tangent. Richard Simmons was asked to voice the robot, but he didn't want to do it because it was a robot version of him and not him in the show.
That is really weird. It's a weird. Yeah, I forgot that
part. It's a weird stipulation, but yeah.
But I think, too, if they'd gotten Richard Simmons, then it absolutely would have been in the episode because like, we recorded Richard Simmons. We're not going to use it. So it also makes the joke weaker when it's just Dan Castellaneta doing a good impersonation.
It's okay.
Well, it's not, you know what? Not even good. It's average.
You know who it is when you hear it, but it's just like whatever.
Bart is now living with Burns, and I'm getting the clips now, but I'm continuing Chris's tradition of every Phil Hartman voice. But
thank you.
We can't not do this. So this is all of the words Phil Hartman says in this episode.
Damn clogs. Well, you good folks can rest easy now because you've come to the very best in legal representation.
Excuse me, is there an Orange Julius stand on this floor?
I'll sell you this one. It's almost full.
Well, why don't I drink out of a toilet bowl?
He'll be back. And as for your case, don't you worry. I've argued in front of every judge in the state, often as a lawyer.
This court rules in favor of Montgomery Burns. I find that he is clearly the boy's biological father.
Judge, these won't be ready until Thursday.
You know, we should really stop hiring him.
No,
that's
never.
The best joke where they're just going, why do we keep hiring this guy?
They have to address it because they can't forget who he is. Unlike every other character, they need to forget who they are in order for more stories to happen. Yeah, so Lionel Hutz has taken up shoe repair. And I love...
It replaces the I can't believe it's a law firm joke.
Yeah.
It's him in shoe repair.
And I love Skinner just being like sternly disgusted. Why don't I drink out of a toilet bowl then?
And the way he straightens his tie. Yeah. I like that. The little extra fidget of like, why don't I just drink out of a toilet bowl? And then in a half-drunk Orange Julius, too, that he's trying to sell like, eh?
He's always trying to hustle.
And then he's so bad he can't prove that Homer and Marge aren't Bart's parents. Like, that's insane.
They should declare a bad court thingy.
And also, I didn't get the clip for it, but right before this, we get Wiggum refusing to help. And it's the third episode in a row where Wiggum goes, I don't want to do my job.
Yeah.
Like, can't you do this?
I can't be policing the whole neighborhood.
Yes. Same, like, sure, an elephant. Like, it's the same joke, but I love it.
Yeah.
So then we come back, and Bart is at the height of luxury. And it's when we get one of our Simpsons favorite quotes.
Yay.
Wow, Bart. Mr. Burns gives you everything you could ever want. My parents use that old love excuse to screw me out of toys. Well, I'm sure you'd like to be alone with your possessions.
Milhouse, if you stay a little while longer, you can have this blazer. It's a Bob Mackie original.
Wow! A Bob Mackie! Sorry, Bart.
I'm not used to hearing the in there. We always play Wow, Bob Mackie.
Yeah, I took the A out a long, long time ago for Wow, Bob Mackie and other shows.
That's my Twitter name now. Or it has been for a year or so.
Well, I got in contact with you for the first time through Twitter, and I thought that was like... I really thought that was an adopted name you came up because I'd never heard of it anywhere but here.
Yeah. In fact, actually, so from the age of...
You've been haunted your whole life by Bob Mackie.
I have been.
I didn't know it was a real person.
So born in the early 80s, from the age of 3, I knew who Bob Mackie was because every adult would hear my name and be like, oh, like the designer. And I would be like, I guess so, because he did a lot of stuff for Cher. He just was all over the place. So I've known about this guy. And when this episode aired, I think I was in sixth grade. I came to school the next day. I'm like, I'm going to hear it. Like, wow, you were on the show last night, Bob. Like, these kids didn't know who Bob Mackie was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was my brief moment in the sun that The Simpsons said my name. And now
his name is spelled M-A-C-K-I-E.
Right.
Not like yours.
Mine's E-Y, which is why everyone misspells my name when they write it down.
Damn.
Yeah, E-Y is the true Mackie. Don't be fooled.
Well, you had a choice at some point. You could have been Robert Mackie or you could be Robbie Mackie.
I was Bobby for a long time. My family still calls me that. But I think at like age, around this time, I did go by Bob. I put my foot down and said, no, it's Bob.
You shouldn't step over the fact that you are the last American ever named Bob.
That's true. And I take pride in that. I was the only guy in the games industry named Bob, as far as I know. And there were like, sorry, Chris, there were like 1,000 Chris's, 1,900 Ryans, 43,000 Matts, the only one Bob, which only is why I was taken advantage of by all these fans who hate me. They can always find me. I'm the only Bob. But this set they're on, this bedroom thing, it's a direct reference to the show Silver Spoons.
That's what I was going
to
say, yeah. He's got the arcade machine. He's got the train set.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they do anything more with it than that. Just a visual reference to a very shitty sitcom.
Yeah, yes. I only remember it because
the rich kid and his black friend.
Ricky Schroeder.
Ricky Schroeder. Was Jason Bateman on that show?
No, that was the Hogans.
It came on somewhere in the orbit of different strokes, which was the only sitcom I liked.
Silver Spoons, like Punky Brewster and Charles in Charge, were one of the first sitcoms to be canceled and then syndicated for a season.
And those syndicated ones are just so much shittier.
Yeah, well, you could tell they had a lot less
Although,
money.
I will say Mama's Family got better when it was syndicated.
Would you know that Bob Mackie,
Hi, Bob.
He was a major fashion designer, especially in the 70s and 80s, though continuing into the 90s and even 2000s, still with us. But his biggest work in the realm of television was on variety shows like The Sonny and Cher Show, Carol Burnett, and that then transitioned to Mama's Family. He worked on Mama's Family. As a costume designer. And if you wonder what that Bob Mackie sounds like, I have an interview with him here. It's coincidentally enough, talking about Judy Garland.
Ooh.
I did not review Persona.
Judy was a mess, basically. Judy was unbelievably talented. She was this little fragile bird that could just tear up the stage and be so exciting. But, you know, at 22, 23, I was so idealistic. I just thought sometimes, she's so unprofessional, you know.
Wow, I mean, throwing shade at Judy Garland.
Well, if he was working with her like 10 years before her death, I bet she was pretty unprofessional.
Yeah.
But who cares? She is a god. I don't. Judy Garland could shit on me.
This is your second Judy Garland reference thrust up on the show.
There's two other famous Bob Mackies I know of because it comes up when I look for things I've done. One is a Florida basketball coach, and another one is Robert Mackie, who writes for the New York Times, I think.
Yeah.
So I can use him on my resume and lie, and I'm that guy too.
Oh, I'm that guy. Yeah. There was another interview I found with Bob Mackie where he is talking about designing Barbie clothes with a Barbie collector, and they both seem like a Smithers type, right, I'd say. But yeah, so that's now, in case you ever wondered who the other Bob Mackie was, that's who it is.
He has all my SEO. I need it back.
Quick tangent. I was on the streets of Berkeley waiting to have brunch with my mom on a Sunday, and a dude comes up to me who is not in the age range of podcast listeners or video game fans. And he's like, "Are you Henry Gilbert?" "Yes, I am too." And he was a professor at Berkeley College and telling me that I had supplanted his SEO and that he was like an archaeological dude. He's like, "I used to be the number one Henry Gilbert on Google, and now you are, and you replaced me." He wasn't that angry. I'm putting some anger on him. But he was pointing out to me that like he now knew who I was because I replaced him even in Henry Gilbert Berkeley stuff. And that was back then. I got to think I have even more power over archaeologist Henry Gilbert.
There was a Chris Antista who had been written up in several New York newspapers about pioneering the hot dog stand. And I trounced that motherfucker. And if I see you in person, I'll fight you.
Unfortunately,
I am the Chris Antista of America.
All of my SEO, if you Google my name, I think all the top hits are people writing about me on Gamergate boards.
Yes.
Gamergate boards. And a certain YouTuber who does not like me very much.
Yeah, you know, I can't get as many hits on that guy. Like sometimes his fans reference me too, but I'm just not as famous as you.
Oh, come on.
Speaking of destructive assholes, Bart's given given a reckless car that he almost murders people with.
Yes.
It's a very well animated scene, and it's the introduction of Estonian Dwarf.
Yes, does he have an actual name? I bet they named him in like season 25.
According to the wiki, he's just Estonian Dwarf. They've seemingly never given him a name.
So this joke was a very important turning point on the Simpsons animation team, in which they were asked to do something nightmarishly impossible. The original scene was Bart in his car versus a train. And they would constantly miss each other through all these switchbacks, or like the train would constantly hit the car but almost not kill Bart. I don't know how it's even hard to describe in words.
Well, it would be a train full of animals too, wouldn't it?
I think that was a different joke.
Okay, yeah. Yes,
but it was Bart versus a train, and David Silverman was like, it would take 2 weeks to even figure out how this would work.
Wow.
So they compromised and they were like, let's do this instead. It's much easier to do, and it's actually a funnier joke because you're just putting the pieces together in your brain of what's happening.
It's a better joke, and it was It had to have been a watershed moment of the animators putting their foot down with the new guy of saying, like, we can't do everything you want. I know you've worked on live action, so you think this is just magic and we draw everything. Like, no, these are human beings. It would be the same as if he had asked on his live action shows, like on Gary Shandling, he said, so this week Gary Shandling is going to go to a factory, so can you just build a factory set in here? Yeah. Like, I mean, it'll just be cool to build a factory. You build it as fast as you built the couch set.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really understand, like, anything we write, you can animate, so which is why there were so many crowd scenes and things like that in Merkin episodes, but I feel like Al Jean and Mike Reese, the previous showrunners, they had to learn this too, and Merkin had to learn it as well, and this is one of the reasons that Klasky Csupo basically put their foot down and were fired, because they didn't understand animation, the writers, and they kept asking for all these unreasonable things, and it's not that Gabor Csupo, sorry, I couldn't think of it for a second, it's not that he was crazy or a bad businessman, he just was like, we can't do this. We can't make all these changes.
You're not paying. We don't have the budget for it, too, I would think.
And it was all on their dime, all these retakes and stuff, so that's why they got fired.
In case you didn't know, Estonian Dwarf would appear. He would be beaten nearly to death by Homer Krusty as the
Hamburglar.
Check my medical bracelets. Yes.
Which, stop, he's already dead. Another great meme thing. I can't wait to get that episode in 6 months. And
there's a Jaws of Life in the trunk.
And also, Estonian Dwarf was Fallout Boy's stuntman in the filming of the Radioactive Man. I'm only Fallout Boy when it hurts. It was a real celebrity-focused joke about the deprogramming guy that he deprogrammed Jane Fonda, but not Peter Fonda.
What's the joke there? Peter Fonda just kind of disappeared after Easy Rider?
Peter Fonda's still crazy and wacky.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
At that point, Peter Fonda, he had done no about such about face. He was still an icon of the 60s.
Well, meanwhile, Jane Fonda had done fitness videos and married Ted Turner.
Yeah. And said she regretted some of her activism.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Paul McCartney, he didn't need to be convinced to be in Wings, but that he that he had to be told to get out of Wings.
He's the best one.
The implication that Wings was also like a cult keeping Paul McCartney there. I like that.
It's funny though how all of the Fox News grandpas are still mad at Jane Fonda. Hanoi Jane.
Yep, never will.
Yeah.
And then he accidentally kidnaps Hans Moleman, and Hans Moleman is convinced to be Simpsons.
Named Hans Moleman for the first time. He was Mellish in his previous appearances.
That's right.
Sorry. It was in Duffless. I think he was named Hans. But I don't think we heard Moleman.
My name is Hans. No, they never said. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, people, but I'm pretty sure they never said Mole Man out loud before, which was the internal joke about him that when Matt Groening saw him as a background character he never wanted to see again, he said, "It's like a Mole Man." Yeah. And he does look like a bit like the Fantastic Four villain Mole Man.
Remember, he is canonically 31 years old.
Yes, that's true. And then Mr. Burns enjoys Itchy and Scratchy a little too much. I just love all his laughter.
Like a hug.
That's when the sliver joke was funny, but it also served a plot purpose.
Oh, yeah.
They could go back to the video he'll show Bart to convince him his family hates him. Just they barely even touch on it, but it gives a little emotional heft to it that Bart wants to come back and lets you know. But then we get the fake family, which much like Richard Simmons, I feel like they tried to get Michael Caine and couldn't.
I have a story about that.
I do not miss Bart at all.
I am glad he's gone.
As am I.
Bo!
It's probably my imagination, but something about them didn't seem quite right.
Really? Excuse me for just a moment. People, that was all wrong. Homer Simpson doesn't say Bo, he says Go.
Sorry, MB, but I'm having trouble with this character. Is he supposed to have some kind of neurological impairment, like Rain Man or Awakenings? I mean, what the hell am I doing here?
And his dialogue has none of the wit and sparkle of Murphy Brown.
Hey, you know, we're getting into golden time.
Yes, we'll just get it right. We'll all be back doing Come Blow Your Horn at the Westport Dinner Theater. All right, then, let's see what the old Simpson family is up to now.
That's them, all right.
I do not miss Bart at all.
That was his math owl voice.
Yeah,
I like that too. Dan went back to
doing
his math
a bad Homer.
Yeah. So the story is they wanted Michael Caine for Homer and Apu. He was going to be the celebrity that visited Springfield, not James Woods.
James Woods was so much funnier.
Yeah, I think it's better that they got James Woods, but they wanted to put him in the show, so they put him in this episode instead. It's not really him, but it's like you're going to be in the show no matter what, Michael Caine.
To make it recognizably Michael Caine, they draw his glasses in the character design, but he's wearing the glasses under a mask, which physically doesn't work.
That sounds painful.
But those are magical masks anyway that just become your skin.
And if you want to say Michael Caine like Michael Caine, say my cocaine.
My cocaine. Cocaine.
My cocaine.
Steve Coogan and the other guy in that...
It was only 13 years old.
Only 13.
Mr. Bruce.
It's very cross indeed.
Yes.
Fucking love this.
Steve Coogan's a fucking great.
He is so wasted in those Batman movies. He's just like exposition bot.
Yes.
Let me tell you what happened in the last movie, Mr. Wayne.
Some people just want to watch the world burn, Bob.
Well, even the joke in 1994 was Michael Caine will do anything.
Yeah,
he'll,
that's true.
He'll do an Oscar-worthy performance one movie,
fresh
and then
and
in the next
heading
movie.
Heading to Jaws 4.
Yes.
Hey, he was fresh off of Muppet Christmas Carol.
He was.
Which
and
I love.
And he did a damn good job in it. It was really good. But I also felt like that was definitely them throwing shade at people who said that Murphy Brown is a more funny show or clever show.
Who was the woman supposed to be?
I don't think she was supposed to be anybody.
I don't think anyone in particular, but... I definitely read her smoking as like, well, Julie smokes all the time, so maybe that's
that
what...
could be it. Yeah, I think that wit and sparkle was from TV Guide, that quote.
It felt very, that does feel like it. So Estonian Dwarf says golden time, which I'm guessing, I think it means golden hour, or it's like some extra pay thing. When you're
golden
like, hey.
Time is actually referring to when you're shooting outside. It's the perfect time when the sun is like in the best position possible to give you the greatest light. They're not outside, though, so I don't know why he's saying that.
It feels like it definitely feels like an insider term of just an actor saying, you're going to pay me more because it's
taking
you're thinking
of the magic hour.
Oh, magic hour?
Magic
well,
hour
it's also called
show.
The golden hour.
And, yeah,
but
golden
I think
hour.
Isn't the golden hour has something to do with like crew in between, like, crew doesn't have to go to lunch. Mm. This person doesn't have to be offset. It's the perfect time.
Well,
I could be wrong about that.
And Terrence Malick famously loves the golden hour, and that's why his films take 8 years to film, because like, we're only filming for this hour today.
We're going to shoot 1 hour a day.
We're really deconstructing this joke, but I think he's saying like we're wasting time. I think the Estonian dwarf is the guy who got the line right, and no one else did.
Who sounded exactly like Lisa, too. It was a very good job by the Estonian dwarf, but I mean, he was the one who lived the closest with Lisa, so I understand why.
We missed one thing. The deprogramming company was called ConformCo.
Oh, that's fun. That's cute. I love the little joke of, that rib always breaks. Mm-hmm. Just the hugging of Burns breaks his rib. Lisa's destroying the house because they need chaos in the house when Bart's gone. That's when Homer falls over and is clearly concussed and just like down, does not move again.
He doesn't move after that.
And then things really just speed up to the ending. And so it comes to the firings and seemingly the death of Lenny.
Okay, let's make this sporting, Leonard. If you can tell me why I shouldn't fire you without using the letter E, you can keep your job.
Okay. I'm a good work guy.
You're fired.
But I didn't say...
You will.
I mean,
by that
logic, Burns and Smithers should be dead at the end of this episode.
Well, Smithers refers to it as Leonard's carcass. So it's just like, he is dead.
I know it's not a direct reference, but it's wonderful connotations to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Sweetheart. Well, the way she did, I want it. No!
This episode races to a close. The previous scene is Bart getting won over by Burns. Then they're in this scene where he's put to the test. Like,
they're in the scene immediately.
Yeah.
I think for 1 second, like, he might be better off here. It matches up better.
It also makes you wonder, too, that they cut the Richard Simmons thing because that was like 30 seconds they didn't have.
It was a lot
of
time.
And speaking of time, I will always remember this episode because I flew too close to the sun as a Simpsons recorder off television in that I knew there was only enough space for one more episode, but I was like, no, I'm going to get this. I want one more episode on this tape before I start a new tape so it can be an even longer marathon. And everything's going fine.
And then we get to
when Bart says, you're fired. And before it can reveal its burns, my tape stops.
Oh, man.
And so I had no more of this episode. I had to just remember it in my mind until the DVDs,
you
really.
You fucked yourself, Henry.
So, I was so disappointed. I never did that again. If it seemed like there was only 20 minutes of tape left on the VHS, I was like, nope, starting a new tape. Not going to risk it.
So Bart is put to the test by being ordered to kill his father.
Yes.
Fire him now or I'll disown you. You'll lose everything. The fabulous toys, a lifetime of wealth and luxury, the gift certificate from Blockbuster Video, the freedom to do whatever you want.
I'll miss you, son.
I'm sorry, Dad. You're fired.
What? Fire me? That does it. You can never be my son.
A little to the left.
Huh? Oh, very well. You can never be my...
Sir, try to land on Leonard's carcass!
Then they just hug after that, too.
Smithers does not say E yet. Does he go back to work the next day?
Yeah, so that's what doesn't work here. Even if Homer wasn't literally fired by Bart, how is he not fired the next day? Other than the only thing that would make sense is that Burns is so injured that he just forgot he wanted to do that and doesn't fire Homer.
That's true. Bart, he always forgets who Homer is. So,
but that
Bart doesn't have the legal grounds to emancipate himself.
But so that was really a callback to earlier in the episode with the boot. Bart tells him to move to the left end. Just the same as Bart, Burns just complies.
And Bart is welcomed back home and he meets his new older brother.
Yes. Well, it felt like they were trying to tie up a loose end that they probably could have gotten away with not tying up, of just them explaining to Bart, you think you saw your fake family, but that wasn't us. And they're like, how would you know that?
They were complicit with the whole fake, the whole fraudulent family deal.
I hope they got good money for that.
Yeah, maybe they didn't know why they were being studied.
I guess, trying to get my character down. But yes, then the show ends with a new member joining the Simpsons family.
This is great.
And now I want you to meet your new brother, Hans Mole Man.
Cowabunga, dudes.
Give it a try. It's like kissing a peanut.
Homer, I want that thing out of my house.
What a weird, great joke. Homer likes kissing his dry, wrinkled, salty head.
It's just he loves it so much. That, meanwhile, Marge refers to Hans Moleman as a thing. Though, I wonder if they considered reanimating that, because his skin color becomes yellow in that scene, and Hans Moleman is always drawn with brown
skin.
He's
a little browner, but weird.
But he becomes yellow for the scene. I mean, there have been other episodes. To this point, he had been drawn as brown. I know other episodes he's been colored as yellow, as traditional yellow as well.
I think it was redesigned to be yellow, but not everyone got the memo.
That's true. But it's just that Homer is obsessed with kissing him. It's a great, weird ending.
It is a weird way to end the show, but a great one. And this is I think this could be my favorite season 5 episode. I love it.
It's up there.
I love Mr. Burns episodes, and this is the best one, I think, out of the entire
Rosebud
series.
I like Rosebud a little bit more.
They're so close to each other, I can't decide. But what a great episode. We went long, but I think this episode really deserved us for this whole treatment.
Oh, for sure, I mean, this comes right after Bart Gets an Elfin, which I did love that episode.
Oh, yeah, I mean, season 5 is really taking off.
It's such a strong season. And it's nice that it's stayed strong, seemingly, to the end. We only have 4 episodes left.
Season 4 kind of flagged a little towards the end.
Yeah, as we were kind of harsh to season 4 in the end of it, of just
I think we're fair.
Yeah, but, when we got to the front, we were I remember this being funny, but boy, this is a threadbare plot.
The scales fell from our eyes.
Yes, but it was still, there's still tons of great jokes, but this... Well, it's definitely better than the front. But I like this one quite a lot.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. Every Monday, a new classic gaming podcast. Go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast device, machine, or directory. Henry.
I'm HENEREYG on Twitter, and that's where you'll find out about when episodes go live. But even more importantly than that, you already know because you heard this a week early, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
Oh, boy.
That is the new way to support us, as you probably heard in previous episodes, but in case you're new, that is where you can support us. Bob and I quit our jobs to do this full time, and on patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, it's where every episode from now on will go live a week early on there. It's not going to change the order you hear on iTunes, but if you want to skip ahead a week and hear another episode, but you get way more than that at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
We have exclusive content waiting for you right now.
Yes.
Videos, podcasts, anything you want. Well, not anything, but reason.
Yes, well, and especially I want to highlight, we did an interview with Paul Provenzano, who is one of the first people to work on Simpsons video games. He was an executive producer on Bart vs. the Juggernauts, Bart's Nightmare, and Virtual Springfield, as well as a ton of other licensed games back in the 90s. And he tells us so many cool stories.
And there's another Talking Critic waiting for you there, too.
Yes.
So, man, so much great stuff just for initially donating right off the bat.
$5 a month or even $10 a month to get another cool thing at there. And that's where Bob and I are going to be at. And if you already are supporting it, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And again, Patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons.
Christopher.
Laser Time, the show, and the website, LaserTimePodcast.com. Other podcasts there, Video Game Apocalypse. These two have have been frequent guests, Bob and Henry. Yes. In 30, 20, 10, our weekly look, 30, 20, and 10 years ago into the past, we talk about, we're right in Simpsons season 8?
Yes, season 8. Well,
just ended.
The 97 portion, and who cares about the 07 portion at this point? But check that show out. It is really, really fun. A lot like this, clip-laden for 87, 97, and 2007.
I'm more regularly on it now, and I just did a great one talking about... The Chris Benoit murders. Anyway, yes, I listen to all that. There's so many great stuff on Laser Time.
Support Talking Simpsons. If you want, I don't know. I'm involved with a couple of the things that you guys want to do, and it's stuff that I've always wanted to do. And
you've been helping out a lot, Chris.
It's impossible for me to do, given that I work full time on the internet. You guys have to do it, and if you people want it, you got to support it.
Yes, thank you very much.
So that's patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, correct?
Yes.
Cool, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the 100th episode of The Simpsons. See you then.
Woo!
Infotainment.